babies, small enough to haul around on a mini tractor. Very fuel efficient. They've even got a handheld version. Lower power, of course, but good enough for some jobs.
We're doing well enough with what we have, Pancho.
Well, okay. Don't say I didn't make you the offer.
He heard the resigned, slightly disappointed tone in her voice. Pointing a gloved hand toward the habitat, which was nearly at the far horizon, Fuchs said,
We've done quite well so far, don't you think?
For a moment, she said nothing as the three of them watched the habitat glide down the sky. It looked like an unfinished pinwheel. Several spacecraft joined end to end and connected by long buckyball tethers to a similar collection of United spacecraft, the entire assembly slowly rotating as it moved toward the horizon.
Tell you the truth, Lars, old buddy, said Pancho. It kind of reminds me of a used car lot back in Lubbock.
Used car lot? Fuchs sputtered.
Or maybe a flying junkyard.
Junkyard?
Then he heard Ripley laughing.
Don't let her kid you, Lars. She was pretty impressed, going through the units we've assembled.
Pancho said,
Well, yeah, the insides are pretty good, but it surely ain't a thing of beauty from the outside.
It will be, Fuchs muttered. You wait and see.
Ripley changed the subject.
Tell me more about these handheld lasers. How powerful are they?
It'll cut through a sheet of steel 3 centimeters thick, Pancho said.
How long does it take? Asked Ripley.
Couple of nanoseconds. It's pulsed. Doesn't melt the steel. It shock blasts it.
They chatted on while the habitat sank out of sight, and the distant pale sun climbed higher in the dark, star-choked sky. Fuchs noticed the zodiacal light, like two long arms outstretched from the sun's middle. Reflections from dust motes, he knew. Microscopic asteroids floating out there. Leftovers from the creation of the planets. As they started toward the airlock, Pancho turned toward Fuchs.
Might as well talk a little business.
She raised her left arm and tapped the key on her cuff that switched to a secondary suit radio frequency. Ripley was cut out of their conversation now. Fuchs hit the same key on his control unit.
Yes. Business. By all means.
You asked us to reduce the prices for circuit boards again, Pancho said. We're already close to the bone, Lars.
Humphreys is trying to undersell you.
Astro can't sell at a loss. The directors won't stand for it.
Fuchs felt his lips curl into a sardonic smile.
Humphreys is on your board of directors still?
Well, yep. He's promised not to lower HSS's prices any further.
He's lying. They're offering circuit boards, chips, even repair services at lower and lower prices. He's trying to drive me out of the market.
And once he does, he'll run up the prices, as high as he pleases, she said.
Naturally. He'll have a monopoly then.
They had reached the airlock hatch. It was big enough for 2 spacesuited people, but not 3, so they sent Ripley through first. Pancho watched the engineer close the hatch, then said,
Lars, what Humphreys really wants is to take over Astro. He's been after that since the get-go.
Then he'll have a monopoly on all space operations, everywhere in the belt, everywhere in the whole solar system,
Fuchs said, feeling anger rising within him.
That's what he's after.
We've got to prevent that. Whatever it takes, we must stop him.
I can't sell you the goods at below cost, buddy. The board's made that clear.
Fuchs nodded wearily.
Then we'll have to think of something else.
Like what?
He tried to shrug his shoulders, but inside the spacesuit it was impossible.
I wish I knew, he admitted.
I'm becoming dependent on this woman, Humphreys thought, watching Diane Favord as they rode down the moving stairs toward his mansion in Cellini's bottommost level. She was coolly reading out the daily list of action items from her handheld palm comp, ticking them off one by one, asking him to okay the staff assignments she had already made to handle each item. Humphreys rarely left his house. Instead, he had made it into a haven of luxury and security. Half the house was living quarters, the other side given over to the scientists and technicians who maintained and studied the gardens that surrounded the mansion. It had been a brilliant idea, Humphreys thought, to talk Cellini's governing board into letting him create a 300-hectare garden down in the deepest grotto in Cellini. Officially, the house was the Humphreys Trust Research Center that ran the ongoing ecological experiment. Can a balanced ecology be maintained on the moon with minimal human intervention, given adequate light and water. Humphreys didn't care in the slightest what the answer was, so long as he could live in comfort in the midst of the flourishing garden, deep below the radiation and other dangers of the moon's surface. He relished the knowledge that he had fooled them all, even Douglas Stavanger, Cellini's founder and youthful éminence gris. He'd even talked them into rescinding their foolish decision to exile him from Cellini after his part in Dan Randolph's death had become known. But he hadn't fooled the tall, exotic, silky Diane Fervord. He knew. She saw right through him. He had invited her to lunch at the new bistro just opened in the Grand Plaza. She had turned down his earlier offers of dinner, but a working lunch outside the house was something she could not easily refuse. So he had taken her to lunch, and she had worked right through the salad and soy cutlets, barely taking a sip of the wine he ordered, refusing dessert altogether. And now, as they rode on the powered stairs back to his office/home, she held her palm comp before her and rattled off problems facing the company and her solutions for them. "She's become almost indispensable to me," he realized. "Maybe that's her game, to become so important to me business-wise that I'll stop thinking of her as a hot body. She must know that I don't keep a woman around for long once I've had her in bed." He grinned inwardly. "You're playing a tricky game, Ms. Fervord. And so far, you've played it just about perfectly. So far." Humphreys refused to admit defeat, although it was obvious that this luncheon idea had been no victory. He listened to her long recitation with only half his attention, thinking, "I'll get you sooner or later, Diane. I can wait." But not much longer, another voice in his head spoke up. "No woman is worth waiting for this long a time." "Wrong," he answered silently. "Amanda is." As they neared the bottom of the last flight of moving stairs, she said something that abruptly caught his full attention. "And Pancho Lane flew all the way out to Ceres last week. She's on her way back now." "To Ceres?" Humphrey snapped. "What's she doing out there?"
"Talking to her business associates, Mr. and Mrs. Fuchs," Fervord replied calmly. "About undercutting our prices, I imagine."
"Undercutting me? What else? If they can drive HSS out of Ceres, they'll have the whole belt for themselves. You're not the only one who wants to control the rock rats."
"Helvetia Limited," Humphreys muttered. "Silly name for a company. It's really a front for Astro, you know."
He looked around the smooth walls of the escalator well without replying. At this deep level beneath Cellini, no one else was riding down. There was no sound except the muted hum of the electric motor powering the stairs. "Pancho's using Fuchs and his company to make it much tougher for you to take control of Astro. The more business she does through Helvetia, the more the Astro board sees her as a real hero. They might even elect Pancho chairman when O'Banion steps down."
"Drive me out of the belt," Humphreys growled. "That's what we're trying to do to them, isn't it?"
He nodded.
"We'd better do it then, before they do it to us," said Diane Fervord.
Humphreys nodded again, knowing she was right.
"What we need, then," she said slowly, "is a plan of action. A program aimed at crushing Helvetia once and for all."
He looked at her, really looked at her for the first time since they'd finished lunch. "She's thought this whole thing through," he realized. "She's leading me around by the nose, by God." Humphreys saw it in her almond eyes. "She has this all figured out. She knows exactly where she wants to lead me."
"So what do you suggest?" he asked, really curious about where she was heading.
"I suggest a two-pronged strategy."
"A two-pronged strategy?" he asked dryly.
"It's an old technique," Fervord said, smiling slyly. "The carrot and the stick."
Despite his efforts to remain noncommittal, Humphreys smiled.
"Tell me about it," he said as they reached the bottom of the stairs and stepped off.
Once he got back to his office, Humphreys cleared his calendar and leaned back in his chair, thinking, worrying, planning. All thoughts of Diane left his conscious mind. He pictured Amanda out there with Fuchs.